I want this picture to be a commentary on modern conditions, stark realism, the problems that confront the average man.
But with a little sex.
I love to scream and chess.
You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing or interesting.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order. Everything becomes chaos.
There was madness in any direction, at any hour. Strike sparks anywhere.
There are no nations. There are no peoples. There are no Russians. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West.
Okay, the Attorney General says there's too much violence on TV, and that should stop. But even if you took out all the violent shows, you could still see the news.
You are on Screening Jets with Pete Castaldi, and tonight our feature score is by Max Richter from Waltzing with Bashir. An amazing score, an amazing film, and it's not all score, there is one track from that, which is this one. More on Max later.
This is not a love song. 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 I'm passing over. Not a love song. We'll be right back.
from the soundtrack to Waltz with Bashir, Public Image Limited, and This Is Not a Love Song. And if you haven't seen the film, it's quite extraordinary. It's actually an animated documentary directed by an Israeli by the name of Ari Folman, who fought in the Israeli army in the war with Lebanon and wanted to go back and reflect on it, and conducted a whole lot of interviews with fellow soldiers and produced this extraordinary animated feature. And Max Richter produced the score for it. If you don't know Richter, and the reason I'm playing him tonight is because he also did the score for Coral Rekindling Venus. A little more on that later when we hear from John Maynard, the producer. But Richter was also responsible for a couple of tracks on Arrival, his most recent. He worked on the brilliant television series Black Mirror. He also appeared on So You Think You Can Dance, believe it or not. And he worked on the score of Martin Scorsese's Shutter Island. And he's got an amazing body of work, and he's quite an extraordinary composer and musician, German by birth. So we'll get back into a little more of the score from Waltz with Bashir from Max Richter. This is Boaz and the Dogs. You're with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets. And still to come, as I mentioned, John Maynard. We'll also hear from Stephen Sewell, whose film Embedded is finally having some screenings around the country, one-off screenings in a few of the major capital cities. And coming up next, Rachel Perkins. For now, more of Waltz with Bashir and Max Richter. Going to hear tonight is from Waltz with Bashir and Max Richter. It's just going to keep playing on all the way through. Enjoy. This is Iconography. Thank you. You're with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets, 2SER 107.3 and Mixcloud. One of the hotly anticipated Australian films for this year is, without a doubt, Jasper Jones, a much-loved book, now a feature film, directed by Rachel Perkins, who is one of our most interesting Indigenous filmmakers for lots of reasons. Her first feature film was Radiance, then she made an extraordinary short feature, One Night the Moon, and then her company, Blackfella Films, turned out a groundbreaking documentary series called First Australians, which blew open the history of Indigenous Australia and opened our eyes to an extraordinary untold history. She then did the musical Brand New Day, which had a long, long life on theatre stages before Rachel got her hands on it. Mabo, the TV movie. She directed three episodes of Red Fern Now, for which Blackfella Films is also responsible for. Black Panther Woman, a documentary. She directed the Red Fern Now, Promise Me TV movie, and now Jasper Jones. She was also, and I think maybe still is, a commissioner on the Screen Australia board. She was certainly there when I was at the Australian Film Commission. She comes from a very political family. Her father, Charlie Perkins, was the first Indigenous Member of Parliament, and her siblings are also extraordinarily creative across various fields. She's brought a lot to the Australian film industry, not just as a filmmaker, but as someone who stood up for her peoples and ensured that their voice is now heard even louder and more beautifully on our film and television screens. I caught up with her during the week, and we talked a lot about Jasper Jones. We'll save that conversation for next week. But I first wanted to talk to her about the relationship between Rachel Perkins and the political history and the drive to get Indigenous voices up on the big screen, and Rachel Perkins, the filmmaker. So there's Rachel Perkins, the feature film director, and I've just had a quick look at an IF article which mentions your next project, The Prospector, where you basically say you just want to be a storyteller now. So that's Rachel Perkins now, the director. But there's Rachel Perkins, Blackfella Films, who's done some quite extraordinary work, you know, with the Blackfella Collective, if you like, in redressing and addressing the missing stories from our screens, the Indigenous stories, and developing Indigenous talent and bringing them to both small and big screen. What's that journey been like for you? Because it's been a long one, and if we look at what's going on now on our television screens, our cinema screens, on our computer screens, it's been successful.
It has indeed. And, you know, that's been because we all got organised, you know. We formed collectives, we had peak bodies, we lobbied, we wrote policy submissions, you know. We got onto boards, you know, we stood up at the conferences and argued for it. You know, we really fought for and were welcomed, absolutely welcomed into the industry, and then eventually on the terms we wanted to be, which was to make high quality, great work. And so it's been an incredibly satisfying, collaborative thing that we've done, I think. You know, I feel very proud of the thing, you know, that we've got NITV now, that, you know, each state agency has a commitment to Indigenous filmmaking, all the federal agencies do, there's Indigenous units at SBS and ABC. You know, we've just come so far in, you know, 20 years. It's really a credit to everybody, actually. And I think that, you know, in the film and television industry, it's one of those places that's really leading the way. Like, say, as in sports, you know, in terms of Indigenous participation, we're punching above our weight and, you know, the results are there for everybody to see. So that's been wonderful. And I mean, I am not abandoning Indigenous cinema or stories at all. Like, I've got a couple in development, but you know, what's been great actually is, like, at all the Q&As, well, there's one last night and others, is that a lot of teachers are coming and students, and they're like, we've seen all of your films, we study them in our English class, we've seen Mabo, we've seen First Australians, and they're using those films for what we intended them to be used for, and that was to, you know, a new generation of young Australians that see these works and understand their country a little differently. So that is immensely satisfying. So the audiences that, you know, are coming, are seeing my works or our works in schools and our, you know, coming to Jasper Jones as well, but with all of that understanding behind them. You know, so most of them have seen First Australians, most of them have seen Mabo, some have seen Brand New Day, and now they come and see Jasper Jones. So in a way, those films and that understanding inform the way they look at this film, which is really nice.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible, really.
Yeah, knowledge is power. I was also very excited to see that The Drover's Wife, Leah Purser, which I thought was a fantastic play, is now going to go to screen. So I think that that's
great.
That's really exciting.
It is very exciting, as is Jasper Jones, and I've seen it. It's an interesting film. It's a great story. In fact, it turned me on to the book, which I'm enjoying at the moment. Very complex story dealt with a very light touch, and the light touch comes from the book, and Rachel succeeded in taking that light touch to the screen. But as I said, more of that next week. You are with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets. To SER 107.3 and Mixcloud.
Oh, and you know the thing about chaos? It's beer. I love the screaming jets.
From The Score to Waltz with Bashir, as we continue working our way through that brilliant soundtrack from Max Richter. Shadow Journal. Still to come, John Maynard, who's finally succeeded in getting Coral Rekindling Venus, the beautiful full dome work by this year's Byron Kennedy Award winner, Lynette Walworth, Into a Dome in Sydney at Carriage Works, and Stephen Sewell on Embedded. Thank you. from the soundtrack to Waltz with Bashir by Max Richter, Shadow Journal. And as I mentioned earlier, the reason I'm playing Max Richter tonight is because he also did the score for Coral Rekindling Venus, which is an extraordinary full dome work made by Lynette Walworth, who you might know from her documentary, also an actor award-winning documentary called Tender. And Lynette also picked up the Byron Kennedy Award this year at the Actors. And Coral, a full dome work, basically means that it screens in planetariums. You know, you've been to a planetarium, haven't you? Kind of kick back and lay back and look at the heavens blast through. If you've got a planetarium anywhere near you, are there only two or three in Australia, one in Brisbane, one in Melbourne, and a very small one in Adelaide, then every now and again they get very hippy-trippy and, you know, do these Pink Floyd nights and blast out a bit. But mostly it's looking at the stars and the cosmos. And, well, Coral Rekindling Venus was made by Lynette and released internationally in 2012 for the Transit of Venus. And it's essentially, there were two versions, a 22-minute version and a 45-minute version. And in 2012, I worked on the release of it. And again, in 2013, the first release, 2012, saw it screened in 25 planetaria around the world on that very day, on the day of the Transit of Venus. And that was quite an extraordinary event. And then in 2013, it screened at Sundance New Frontiers, and we toured through 14 planetaria across North America. It was an interesting project because when you rang up the planetariums and said, look, we've got this film, it's all set underwater, it's all about coral, it's all about bleaching, it's all about the acidification of the oceans and the death of coral, which is very prescient as I speak to you now, given what's going on the Barrier Reef. Most of them scratched their head and said, no, we do stars, we don't do fish. And our response, of course, well, there's starfish, and that didn't quite work. But one of the great ironies of this film is that it has never actually screened in Sydney, which I would call its hometown. John Maynard, the producer from Felix Media, is based in Sydney. Lynette Walworth, though she spends most of her life travelling around the world working on extraordinary projects, is also based in Sydney. I caught up with John during the week just to see how he was feeling about finally having Coral Rekindling Venus screening in Sydney.
Fucking years later, something. I've been on the case ever since, you know.
Rise for the ocean, rise for the sea, rise for the coral, rise in humanity.
The first outing for Coral Rekindling Venus was in 2012 for the Transit of Venus, and then it went to the Sundance New Frontiers and toured North America, and it's popped up around the world regularly ever since, but it has never screened in Sydney before.
Well, at last we've escaped the problems of the hard top. The work was originally made for planetariums, and there is no planetarium suitable in Sydney. What's happened is that new technology, particularly for projection and for multiple projection into domes, has made enormous leaps forward. And I've been working with a Russian company who have got the most fantastic software to make this happen.
You hold the heart of this world. Rise, let me feel. Started to cry for her
must be pretty exciting for you, because despite the fact that Coral Rekindling Venus is an international project, Sydney really is its hometown.
Yeah, but it's not so much the worry. It's a timeless work. And for instance, this next week, it opens at the Adelaide Festival in a tiny little university planetarium. And all of the sessions there, I believe, sold out as well.
Rise for the sea. Rise while there's still something left to lose. Rise while we still have a chance to choose.
Very, very hard thing for people to imagine what this experience is. It's a remarkable experience, and I've seen it in various planetariums around the world. And it opened, for instance, in the greatest planetarium in the world, which is in New York. And it opened the World Science Festival in 2012. So it's one of those works that is deeply emotional, very current because of it deals with the material in the Barrier Reef. There is no dialogue in it, of course. It's just music. It has the most wonderful soundtrack. It's a superb work.
And I have seen it, and it is a remarkable and unique experience to be so totally immersed in an underwater environment inside a dome.
It's interesting that this is coming at a time where virtual reality, which is a very isolated experience compared with the shared experience of the dome, is becoming something that a lot of people are talking about, and of course a lot of people are trying to find a language for in this new technology. Lynette is also obviously working in that as well, where she often works in the edges of new technology to try to find ways to say things which are important.
Too true. John Maynard talking about Lynette Walworth's Coral Rekindling Venus, which is screening for 4 days only at Carriage Works. Don't miss it. You'll have to book. It's free. And up front you heard Rise from Anoni, formerly Anthony and the Johnsons. And this is Gurumul from the soundtrack to Coral Rekindling Venus. You are with Pete Castaldi on 2SER 107.3 and Mixcloud. Still to come, Stephen Sewell on Embedded. He's quite remarkable. Feature debut.
How about a nice musical? How can you talk about musicals at a time like this, with the world committing suicide, with corpses piling up in the street?
I love the screaming chess.
And as we wend our way into the second half hour of Screening Jets, we continue with Max Richter's great score for Waltz with Bashir. As I mentioned, Richter also did the score for Coral Rekindling Venus. This is Taxi and APC. Any minute now. thinking. You are with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets as we work our way through the score to Waltz with Basir by Max Richter. Stephen Sewell might not be a name that automatically lights bulbs in your head, but he's one of our great writers. Probably more for theatre than for screen. Anyone who has a great love for Australian feature film will remember The Boys, made in 1998. Quite an extraordinary feature film about a terrible, terrible murder and rape with an amazing cast. You might have also seen Isabel Eberhardt. You, of course, saw Chopper. Stephen script edited that. Well, he's been working his way to his first feature film as a director for quite some time, and he finally teamed up with a producer, Steve Jaggi, who he could work with, and they formed a partnership, and Embedded is that film. I saw it last year, well before actor nominations. It was certainly in the nominations to be voted for, but for some reason not enough people voted for it. I don't quite understand it. Maybe I don't quite know what they didn't like about it. I think it's quite an extraordinary, very powerful film. Beautifully written, a great story. Again, very contemporary, about a journalist embedded in a Middle East conflict, and a night not alone in a hotel room with a very attractive woman who is very mysterious until the end of the film. And I'm not going to tell you a thing because you've got to see the film. As I said, I saw the film very about halfway through last year, and talked to Stephen then about his feature debut, Embedded. And there's a little language warning.
Well, that was interesting.
Get out.
Oh, I'm being dismissed from the kingdom of Frank, am I?
You know what I want to know? I want to know what's wrong with you.
In general or in the specific?
What do you want, you little fucking slut?
What I want is to step into a cage with a wild animal and keep it snapping, you great cocksucking ape.
Well, I suppose you've succeeded.
Glad you think so.
Get out, leave me alone, just fuck off!
Oh, is that your standard goodbye speech? How many Rick Marriott has you got behind you?
You don't know anything about me.
Congratulations, it's a fantastic film.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
I know that you had been planning another feature, and as you're a first-time feature film director, despite your screenwriting credits and despite your theatre credits, Embedded was made, I gather, to indicate that you could actually direct a feature film.
That's right.
Tell me about the genesis of the writing of Embedded. How did that come about?
It is an interesting story. I first wrote it as a screenplay and offered it to Jim Sharman to direct, and Jim loved it, and he organised a production. But unfortunately, it fell apart when the investor lost his money on the stock market. So then I adapted it as a play, and it's had a number of productions as a play. But I've oscillated between the play and the screenplay and the play and the screenplay over a few years. So in the course of that, of course, you know, like I eventually ended up going, well, I'm going to direct this myself.
In the process of going from play to screenplay and back to play again, did you refine and hone what ended up being Embedded, the feature film?
Well, inevitably, with each iteration. But the terrible thing about the film is that the politics and the political situation it's referring to has barely moved an inch in the course of the writing. That's a sad thing about how the world works.
You know, what are you doing here?
Oh, well, we're doing good here. We're helping the local people, and yeah.
You had much conflict? Has there been many battles around here?
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, there's a lot going on, and we're always involved in. But, you know, we're doing good.
I suppose you can have that point of view because you've been working on it for so long. But that was one of the things that, for me, gave the film a great amount of depth, was the context and the subtext. At any stage, did you feel like that you were playing with dangerous territory?
Oh, of course. You know, that's the only territory worth playing in. If you're not going to be dangerous, why do it?
You know where I was 4 days ago?
What?
4 days ago, I was in some shit hellhole a million miles away from any of this.
Well, nothing's a million miles
away. I was out there with those guys, you know, those secret guys.
What were you doing?
Killing terrorists, what do you think? I want the
boys were out drinking beer and playing with the drones, I decided to take a bit of the local landscape, get a few cutaways, you know?
You had a camera?
Yeah, I had a camera, all the shit you'd want. Not that it meant anything, because all my stuff had to be forwarded up to the army to get their okay before it could be forwarded on. It was bullshit!
Where the edge is wherever you feel you shouldn't be. You know, if you're feeling safe, then somebody else has done it before you, and you're not at the frontier yet.
You know it's bullshit. We all know it's bullshit, and it was bullshit.
But there I was out in the desert doing this dumb, fucked up, nothing of a non-story,
so I could get my $2,000 a week for another week of trying to figure out what the fuck was going on when I come across this thing. You know,
thing. Stop. These people don't have anything. You know, there's nothing there.
The way the economic system works, most of the people in the world have to be criminals just to survive. It's fucked!
Yeah, all right.
It's fucked! Do you see what I'm saying?
No.
The economy, the things those idiots downstairs are talking about, it's got nothing to do with anything. The real economy, the real world economy, it's guns and drugs!
Your lead character, your lead male character, the journalist, talks about the theatre of war. When he talks about that, to me, there's a wonderful double entendre as the theatre of war as we know it, as it's expressed in you know, news reports, but in the context of Embedded, that expression, the theatre of war, to me takes on another kind of meaning altogether. Is that intended?
True, you know, truth be told, I think there's a psychological truth about it as well. You know, I have to admit that over many, many years of seeing soldiers betrayed by their countries. You know, they imagine themselves to be patriots, you know, fighting the good fight on behalf of their nation. And they come back broken and destroyed, and in the United States and Australia also, you know, the terrible toll of suicide amongst vets and homeless. That isn't new. That's been happening for hundreds of years and is very well known. And you wonder after a while why did they expect what these people, these soldiers, you know, facing their fate, what did they expect was going to happen? And it sort of inclined me to the view that in part what people who are attracted to that kind of thing are trying to do is to give their life meaning by putting themselves in situations of extreme danger and possible death and enacting a role in a theatre of war, that a part of what of our understanding of war is missing, and what that is the great psychological pleasure you can get from being on a battlefield. There's a dangerous thought for you.
Well, I mean, that's one of the aspects of Embedded, and it's probably true of both your lead characters, because it's essentially a two-hander. So we leave the hotel room to experience that theater of war, that battlefield. What the story is about is these two people who meet and psychologically and almost physically dissect each other, and they are two characters who almost are extreme opposites of each other. Even if we look at the journalist, who is such an Aussie bloke, and the woman, who is such an English dame almost, why did you take those two extremes? How did you come to those two?
I think you'd have to ask my psychiatrist.
Stephen Sewell on Embedded. All the music you're listening to is from the film by Ned McPhee and Mac Ruddock. You are with Pete Castaldi on 2SER 107.3 and Mixcloud. And do go and see Embedded, another great Australian film that really should get more screen time than is going to get in cinemas. keep your eye out for it if you can't make a screening.
It is the international system of currency which determines the totality of life on this planet.
I love the screaming chest.
We are winding into the end of the Jets for another week. And it is Max Richter and the score to Waltz with Bashir that you've been listening to almost all the way through the show. And Max will take us up to the end, which draws nigh. Next week, more of Rachel Perkins. And finally, Robert Iolini, as I've been promising for the last couple of weeks, from Studio Sincandy. And who knows what else. And the score for next week? I don't know. I'm sure I'll find some great inspiration over the course of the next 7 days. You have been on Screening Jets with Pete Gastaldi. Thanks for the company. I hope you enjoyed Max Richter and the show. I'll see you next week. And remember, Curved Radio returns next Sunday night. See you just before that. Bye.
I'm getting off this merry-go-round.
I love to scream and jest.